Hello and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon recording from downtown Nicosia. With me all the way from Paphos, I have Despo Pavlou, a fellow South African-born Cypriot, who is an entrepreneur and an author.
Hi, welcome, Magda. Despo. So nice to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm really excited to have you on my show because I read in one of, and we'll get to that, that writing your book was your therapy. My podcasts are my therapy because I find talking to people that I like or inspire me actually moves me beyond anything I'm feeling bad about myself. But this is about you, not about me. So you're South African born, recently come back to Cyprus, written a book about my kind of normal. And that word normal
it's a powerful
bothers
word.
Me because it's a powerful word, but what does it mean? What does normal mean? Because I think, because they always say you're normal or you're mad, okay? There's that normal. You're normal because you fit in with the stereotypes of society. You're normal because you like things that other people... It's got so many meanings, that word, that I sometimes worry about using it.
And I've put it as the title.
You look very normal to me. I know. You look very normal to me, okay? And you sound normal. So tell me about... Let's start at the beginning. You're South African born. Like you, in one of the interviews I read, I find having been brought up in apartheid South Africa and then the South African is actually was an incredible privilege.
It certainly was.
I saw the good and the bad. I saw a lot more of the bad than you did because you know, I'm older.
I agree with you. And I think it's lovely that you put it that way, that there was good and there was bad, because certainly the bad was there. And I also experienced it firsthand. My parents had a business in South Africa at the heart of apartheid. And, you know, we had one entrance for, you know, the Europeans and another entrance for the non-Europeans. So at the end of the day, you faced that as a child and you realized immediately something felt wrong. You know, the segregation was a horrible thing. Naturally, you couldn't digest that. I certainly couldn't. But yes, you know, I mean, what a privilege just growing up in South Africa. Firstly, just such a stunning country. And not only is it in my heart, because it's such a beautiful country, the people in South Africa are amazing. You know, that's it doesn't matter what they go through, they always seem to find humor and they laugh their way out of everything. And that's something to be said, you know. They're a great nation. Well, I should say we. And this is the thing. This is the thing. My whole life, it's been, you know, I'm a Greek Cypriot in South Africa, and when I'm in Cyprus, I'm a South African. So it often, you know, jostles the brain when you, where do I fit in? But we've just recently.
But I think one of the other nice parts of the South Africa we both grew up in is the diversity.
Absolutely.
I mean, I remember going, my father had an Indian partner, and we'd go to his daughter's wedding, or the maid would make me pup for breakfast, which is to the non-South African people, it's like it's a porridge that you could either put milk with sugar for breakfast or gravy for dinner. So, I mean, the diversity of things that just come natural.
But I think that's an example. South Africa's diversity teaches you so much about different cultures, different diets, like you say, but also religion, language, all of that. And that, I think if you're exposed to that as a young individual, you certainly are placed well in life when you do understand the person on, you know, on either the other side of you or next to you. And I think that's most interesting. You know, sharing stories, you were talking about how in podcasts, your podcast, people share their stories and you just love listening to stories. But it's in sharing stories that we build an ethos of embracing diversity. And South Africa is
absolutely
just that. You know, this is a country where we've all, you put us on the rugby, in a rugby stadium, and see how we all become one immediately. I mean, the Olympics, we had the World Cup. That's right, the World Cup in 2010. Oh, I don't think I've ever experienced a more beautiful country at the time. And it had nothing to do with the beauty of the country. It had to do with the heart of the people. We became one and we loved it. We weren't great. We didn't do well. I think we won one match. I'm not sure. But South Africa got it. We hosted it and it was amazing.
But when you talk about the heart of the South African, I remember my son's 13 now, so he was a little baby, and I was flying via Athens to South Africa, and there was a rugby match in the UK, and all the rugby fans were coming back through Athens. And I had this little human that was sleeping on me, and this big, brawly South African was sitting in front of me, and he obviously felt sorry for me, and he says to me, "Ma'am, I've got big shoulders. Give me your little boy. Let him sleep on my shoulder. It's not going anywhere. Go and have a coffee, walk around, do what you need to do. I'm not going anywhere." And I thought to myself, how generous of him. And I mean, this is also a man and not a woman. You would have possibly.
Yeah.
And he said to me, "I'm here.
They
I'm
do that.
Here. Just give me a little one." And it was such, I mean, I thought, well, first it was such a relief because I was exhausted. Yeah. I was stiff because he was a good traveler, but he was sleeping and I was holding him. So I thought, you know what, this is the South African spirit, because I think basically South Africans are nice. And it's a word I don't like using because it's another word like normal. But they're nice. Tell me, when you look back on your years of South Africa, who would be a hero to you besides Nelson Mandela?
That's a very good question. Very good question.
I noticed somewhere you liked George Bezos.
Absolutely. You know.
Did you see his documentary?
I watched some of his documentaries, yes. I mean, I take my hat off to George Bezos. I don't know if I see him as a hero. He did so well, and he did so well at a time when South Africa needed it. You know, we've got, I say it all the time, South Africa has the best constitution in the world. Honestly, I have yet to find or hear of any constitution as great as the South African constitution. But the reality is, unfortunately, we're not implementing those policies down on the street. I mean, we talk about South Africans being nice, and we know they are. And yet people have left the country because they fear for their lives. This is not stuff that nice people do. We leave the country because of all sorts of nasties. Businesses have been burnt down for whatever political reason and so on and so on. So, yes, they're amazing people. And we get so much wrong, though, in South Africa too. And we shouldn't hide away from the things we do wrong, because you should always try and improve. And on the side of the Constitution, we have the best in the world, but we need to implement those policies. We can't have gender-based violence, you know, with a constitution like that. Yeah,
it's absolutely an epidemic. It's an epidemic. But you know what? I think what a lot of people don't take into consideration is that the intergenerational violence, the trauma, because I think as much as following apartheid, they tried to do a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and some people were given a space to heal. Mm. The trauma, I look at the maid that was working for me, who she was working, not for me, for our parents. Her one son was with one parent. She had a child with another father. Mm. The breakup of the family.
So sad.
The disconnect of the family. What effect did the apartheid she had, was her experience, have on her children? And this is just we haven't dealt with that intergenerational trauma. And I think that's what's coming out now. We didn't have a civil war when the apartheid was scrapped. Thank heavens
to everyone
for Nelson Mandela in this world.
Mm.
Yes. But the intergenerational trauma is there. People suffered, and people passed on that suffering to their kids and to their grandkids because it hasn't been dealt with. Poverty hasn't, the real structures for poverty haven't been dealt.
No, you're 100% right, you know, Magda.
Anyway.
But just to go back to your question, you know, who's my hero? Who do I foresee to be my hero in South Africa? I don't think I have a South African hero. I have a lot of people I would respect, and certainly, like you said, you know, Bezos is one of them. But my idols and my heroes seem to be more on the Greek side, you know. You've got Maria Callas, you know. Wow. You know?
Oh, wow.
These are people that also came from poverty, from nothing. Nana Mouskouri, you know?
Maria Callas is a terrible role model as a woman. As a singer, she was great. As a woman, she was...
Maybe she's not your kind of normal. Yes.
Anyway, so let's get to that. Why are you not normal? Why do you consider you don't...
Yes, I don't fit in the normal scheme of things. Because... Not now. Certainly not now. There was a time where definitely, yes, I didn't want to be anything but, you know, what society dictates as normal. But certainly, no, that's not the case now. I laugh at that. And it's not arrogant. It's like you don't. Nobody has to fit into anyone's definition of normal. The reality is my normal and your normal varies. But let's look at society's normal, for example. So you need a man and a woman and they marry and they have their two children and their one dog and their one cat and that's normal. And they go visit Yayambapu every Sunday. The reality is,
They've got the station wagon. And they've got the station wagon with a picket fence.
The reality is that's not the case for most people. You know, when I started realizing my sexual orientation, I rejected it. I did not want this. I did not want this. I did not want to deal with the pain. I didn't even understand it. You must remember.
When did you start realizing that you were...
Why am I crushing on that person? She's a girl, you know. This was sort of late in high school and definitely more so when I went to college in Durban. There you start realizing a lot of things. Also because you're by yourself, you're away from home, it's a self-discovery, isn't it? It's a journey, of course it is.
Journey.
And so when I realized these were my options, I thought, well, I can't. I don't want this. I say these are my options because actually it's not an option. You are what you are. And the sooner you accept that and the sooner you believe in it and the sooner you are proud of who you are, because you should never hide who you are, the better you are, the happier you are, and the happier everyone else is around you. You know, when you're shying away from who you are, you're living a lie. And the minute you start living a lie, it has the tendency to hurt people, you know. You marry a man, that doesn't go so well. And then there's children. And so it becomes a big lie. It becomes, and until one day you realize, I can't anymore for whatever reason. Yeah,
I have to, my other lever.
And it always does catch up to you. So, honestly, my advice for the youth the youngsters who are facing these things every day, just save yourself a whole lot of trouble, a whole lot of hurt. It'll be difficult and complicated in the beginning, but it always comes right because you cannot shy away from love.
But you know what I've done volunteer work with Accept
Cyprus, yes,
which is LGBTI, and yes,
oh, I'm lovely, well members. Done, Magda.
We have the right to be
that's
who
it.
We are. It's a simple.
And
as
you
that
don't have
me.
The right to tell me who to be.
Exactly. You either accept me as
but
I am,
now
or just
we're starting
step away
to go
from
towards
me.
You know political policies. So who are you? Who are you to
what
tell me I can't love who I want? Or I can't marry the person I want?
But you know what? At that time when we first started Accept, and even now, you from the villages or from the less open-minded families, you know how scared some of the kids are to tell their
parents.
Let's
look at...
And they face real fear. I mean,
yes.
They've been kicked
let's
out of
Let's look
homes.
At this situation currently in Cyprus, because this really has to be dealt with. When you look at a community and you don't see young couples, gay couples, getting married, and building families, adopting children, which is everyone's legal right, should be everyone's legal right, certainly by 2025, then you have a problem. Then that means you've turned your back on a big section of the community, of a big area that, people need your support. And we're not saying, here, guys, you know, in 20, It was, let me get my facts right, 2015, 10 years ago, we said, okay, let's do the civil union in Cyprus. 10 years ago. In 10 years, we have not been able to pass a law where gays can get married and adopt children, whereas our sister, Greece, has done it. February 2024. And bravo, dus. Honestly, well done, Greece. You know, I applaud them.
Well, I mean, I've always been a believer that, I mean, we've had these big discussions because my son's adopted. And people say, you know what, they should be allowed to adopt, but it's not normal. Everyone needs a mother and father. And I said to them, you know what, kids just need 100%. An environment that loves them. They need to grow up in an... And you can see some normal couples that should never be parents.
This is it.
So it doesn't make the... So, I mean, we have this discussion regularly with my son and a few others. You know, kids just need a loving environment.
You know, was actually involved in a conversation this week at work about this. You know, and my friend was saying, but, you know, boys need their fathers. So if you're looking at a lesbian relationship, boys need their fathers. And, you know, and in their 20s, their trauma starts coming out in one way or the other. And I said, but I disagree with that completely. I mean, for 7 years, my kids and I have three sons and a daughter, lived in a home where it was two women, you know, and she had, obviously her son was there as well. So it was five teenagers and we had, you know, they grew up with two women in the house and all they needed was love and support. And, you know, these are kids who are in their early 20s, one or two of them in their late 20s, my older boys. And they're well-settled individuals. They're contributing to society and their families, and they're level-headed, and they're doing well for themselves and all sorts of things. And that didn't come because they were missing a father figure. And then others, well, then the argument was, but they have a father. Yes, they have a father, but that's not to say, you know, even as a gay couple, you'll have an uncle, you'll have a bapu, you'll have you know what I mean? There will be a male influence somewhere. And the child doesn't necessarily need to receive it from the mother or the father. What my findings are of raising children, and I've had my fair share of experience, is that children are like sponges. They absorb things. So if they see a character that they like, they would want to take part of that character and grow to become that character or parts of that character. And whatever characters they don't like in an individual, they'll reject. So they want to become a good person. So, this person's calm. I want to be calm. This person's shy. I don't like to shout. This person's funny. I want humor in my life. You know what I mean? And this is what they base it on. And the mother and father is not the be all and end all of children's upbringing, but you can influence them by exposing them to the right kind of people.
I remember when my son was going through a few issues at school, he would go to school but not going to class, and still can't tell me why. And they,
I know about that.
And we tried to find him a psychologist, and I thought, you know what, if he gets a male psychologist, it'll replace the dad figure. And it ended up that the only person my son opened up to was a counselor at school that looked like me. The slightly rounder woman, plethoric. That's the person who he had confidence in. Because she looked like me. I mean, I looked at her and I thought, why this woman? And I thought, body shape was me. So he looked for, so you actually don't know what's missing from them and what
the reality is.
No, you can't predefine. Yes. You can't predefine. They will find it where they find it from the complete.
And this is exactly what I'm trying to say. Thank you for putting it so well. That actually, you might not be everything they need from you, but they may be. But they will also find what they need from whoever. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm saying that well, says the author.
Tell me how difficult did you find telling this to your mom and your dad?
Difficult. Certainly not one of my fun days.
How old were you?
Well, how it came out was I was actually involved with a woman who, and then it came out. And I then had to sit my parents down because they got a phone call and said, you know, we've seen something, and they got to hear about it. And yeah, I sat down with him, and no, my dad flew off the handle. He didn't take it too well. My mother, you know, a mother always wants to understand her child, but I must admit it was very difficult for her too. It was probably the hardest day my parents ever had in their lives. To this day, I think my father's health was affected because of the news. And that's not to say, you know, I put the man in his grave, but it was very difficult for him. And it was for my mom too. And it took a lot of conversations. After that, there was no conversation with my father. He rejected it. There wasn't going to be any of that. And he packed.
Did he stop talking to you or not? No, what happened
was I was separated from my husband, and we were going through the divorce. And I was staying with my parents. My four kids and I were staying with my parents. And the news came out. And I think it was 2 weeks they packed us up and we came and moved to Cyprus. Stayed in Cyprus for a year or two. And then... Yeah.
Easier to deal with you
from
afar.
Well, I think, you know, to be honest, Magda, my father was ashamed of what the community would think, you know, about this situation.
No, yeah. I totally understand. I mean, understand it's very easy to judge someone of that generation.
No, I don't judge them because hard. They also, you know, actually, I have so much respect for them because they dealt with something. You must remember, I rejected it. So if I rejected it, can you imagine what my poor parents had to do? So, you know, and I was the one coping with it and dealing with it. So I had time to process it. That day, you know, I had to just sit and tell my parents, well, yes, actually it's true. And this is who I am. And so we did. We came to Cyprus, started a new life, and there was no other conversation with my father until the day he died. But my mom has been incredible. I take my hat off to my mother. This is a woman who grew up in a staunch Greek Orthodox home where they went to church all the time. She left Cyprus at the age of 18, met my father in South Africa. It was a Broxenia. Loved him. Yes.
Like my
I loved him. They had the best 38 years together before he died. And kept her faith, kept her religion, kept her everything, her ethics, her, you know. And she had to learn to understand my world because it wasn't a world she knew. She certainly didn't like the connotation that, you know, her daughter was gay. She certainly didn't like the stigma that it came with. And people in Cyprus are, as they were in South Africa when I first came out, very cruel, very hard.
Exactly.
They feel judgmental. They can say anything to you, you know. They were anything from death threats to all sorts of things. But the reality was my mom has embraced this.
Yeah, what? Yes. Death threats? What?
Well, exactly.
Why death threats?
Because of who I loved. I would get anonymous mail sent to me with all sorts of crazy things. But the reality was, you know, going back to my mom, just amazing how she has taken this. To give you an example, there's a chapter 29, which is a highly hot chapter in the book. And I said to my mom, Ma, this book's going to be published, but it's got this chapter. And she's like, and she would joke, Makarina Bethano na me pari theosmo, print of kid of Biblio. So, how many books have we sold? How's the book going? So, you know, this woman has taken this situation and has learned to understand it. And she loves me, and she's my biggest supporter. and she will defend me till the end of time.
But it is, I mean, moms do that. Not all moms do that, but good moms do that, because bottom line, she wants you to be happy.
Now that she understands, you know, but oh, it took shouting and screaming and tears and hugs and kisses and more screaming and shouting. But you know what? We got there. We got there, and it was a lot easier getting there with my kids. Kids are just...
How did your kids take it? They knew before your mother and father did, or didn't they?
Look, they were young, you know, at that time. But kids take everything like kids take everything. They take things in their stride, as long as you speak to them in a way that they understand, and you keep staying, you know, on the line of love and support, and honesty. They must see you real. They must see your pain. They must see your happiness. Mm. But they were super fine. And I worried. Okay. They're going to be teased, you know, at school, because we lived in a closed community at that stage. And the other thing is, you know, there are teachers who stand up and go, you know what, gay people go to hell. Now your kid is sitting in that class and thinks, why is she saying mommy's going to hell? You know what I mean? So, you know, we had to work through a lot of things.
But you know what, that's what, I'm a single parent, okay? When I came to Cyprus, my son was 5 and he was going to school, and the teacher, the place, what you call a pre-primary, the teacher would draw a picture on the blackboard and it would be mommy, daddy, child, and dog. And I'd say to the teacher, but what the hell, dude? Mm. Me and my son are a family. We don't need anyone else. Why can't that also be one of the things that are normalized? Why does it always have to be a mother and
father? In South Africa.
Let's not go to the same parent, same sex. Just take one of the parents as well, because divorce is common. And my son doesn't have his father living in the house. Fortunately, he wasn't living in the country as well, but that's another story.
No.
But he's got a good relationship with his father.
Their relationships with their father are very important, and they establish that on their own.
Yes, they're precious.
But you know, speaking about this exact same topic, Magda, in South Africa, they have started very much because of the Zulu communities, where, you know, perhaps both parents have died and the grandmother's raising the kids, or there's an auntie raising the kids. They are actually rejecting the mother, father, parent or family unit, because it doesn't exist in South Africa. Most families are not that, you know. Yes, there are many that there is mother and father, and please let's not minimize that, because that is also, you know, part of our
if it works, fantastic. You're fortunate.
But it's also a reality, it's also a real thing. Families are mothers and fathers, but families are also just grandmothers, or just grandfathers, or just an aunt, or just two women, or two men.
Yes.
So, yes.
Or your dog.
So the reality schools have to start working on that, because they do in South Africa.
Because you often get people getting married, and I say, so when are you starting a family? Dude, I am a family. The two of us are a family. We don't need kids to have a family. So these pressures of what...
But you know, for a young gay couple, and this is why it's so important for Cyprus to get it right, we need to get these kids married. Let them marry who they love, and let them adopt kids. Because why not? You know, all they're doing is wanting to start a family like anybody else. And my oldest doesn't have that dream. But, you know, most that dream. He doesn't want to settle down and start a family. And well, not yet. Anyway, I don't believe that will change.
And my son's already been in a relationship. He's already given names to his future kids. My son's very much...
And so are the rest of mine.
They each have their own dream.
You know, they want their children, whatever. Again, whatever makes you happy. But certainly, we look at the communities here in Cyprus, and I don't see gay youngsters, getting married and adopting kids and starting their families and, you know... doing life together. And we've turned our backs on them, and we need to focus on that. We need to honestly help these individuals. We really do. And you help them by giving them love and support. Show them the laws protect them with the laws.
But I agree with you. We all deserve to be happy. We all deserve to be happy. And as you said, our kind, my kind of happy or my kind of normal, it doesn't need to fit into the stereotype of what it should be with the mommy and daddy and the big fat Greek wedding and the 2.5 children that come afterwards and the count and the dog. I mean,
exactly.
You can get the picture. Has it been easy fitting into the LGBTI community here in Cyprus?
For a long time, I've made peace with the fact that this is who I am and I love who I am. And I haven't struggled with it. I certainly don't shy away from it. I don't struggle with it at all. You know, I'm openly, people at work know I'm gay. People that I socialize with know I'm gay. Whether it's South Africa or Cyprus, it's not an issue for me at all. So I fit in, yes.
Okay. So tell me now about the other part of normal. You're the entrepreneur. Are you still an entrepreneur?
Well, since I moved to Cyprus, I work for someone. I ran my own businesses for over 30 years. And moved to Cyprus 3 years ago. I don't think it's something I want to go back into running my own business again. Certainly, I would want to continue my career as an author. I am working as an operations manager. May I say the name of my company? I'm very proud of them.
Absolutely.
I'm working for Gibostiza them, which is it's also known as Chakaria in Bafo. It's a family-owned business, and there's three of them here in Bafo. And for those South African listeners, it's based on the same business model as Food Lovers Market. Now, Food Lovers Market is quite a successful brand and franchise in South Africa. But I'm exceptionally proud to be the operations manager. They're an amazing family. We share the same business values. We have the same visions for the business, the same way of, you know, similar ways of dealing with all sorts of strategic planning and building morale amongst the employees, and that we have the same values. And that's amazing, I think, to find someone that you can connect with in Cyprus, being a foreigner, you know, not having grown up with them here.
I agree with you.
Special, and they're a special family, and they've done so well. These are people who wake up at 4 in the morning, and they're the first to arrive.
Are they also South Africans?
No, they're also refugees like I am. They're from Gadozovia, and lost everything and came to Bafo and started from scratch. And like I said, the first to get to work, the last to leave, and I have so much respect for them. Amazing business and absolutely beautiful people.
Okay, so you're enjoying your work, but you're also writing your second book on the side.
I started the second book. I'm still aggressively marketing the first one. We're doing quite well with the first one. My Kind of Normal is available in paperback, ebook. We're currently working on the audio. And we're also trying to see if there's someone interested in publishing it in Greek, translating it, because there's a big demand for that.
Okay.
I've spoken to one or two publishers, and we're not quite getting what we want to out of it. So we keep talking and we keep fighting, but the second book has already started, yes.
And is it on the same lines, or is it something completely different?
It's a different book. It's different, yes. A lot of people have said, can we have a sequel? But no, this is different. And it actually is going to be touching on more serious and in-depth topics such as adoption, such as starting families, such as what are the options. But it's an amazing book. It is in its starting phase. It's still an infant, but I've got such a vision for it, and it's going to grow.
Okay, how did you fall in? So you say you, like me, you fell into writing,
you know,
for therapy.
I always knew from a kid, my essays were always very good. I always knew I was going to write a book. I really did. But when I started writing this, I was going through a really tough time with my partner at the time. We were separated or separating. So I would put pen to paper and just start typing. And I felt that, you know, I started typing feelings. Within a few weeks, I realized I had quite a lot of material. And just reading through it one day, I thought, oh, wow, this could actually be a book. Maybe this is the book. And in writing, oh, wow, I felt better. I used to feel better. I would get up from that laptop and just feel like a ton was off my shoulders. It was like I was feeding the computer all of my woes, and it was coming out into this beautiful story. It was creating this beautiful story from my sadness. And finished the book, sent it to, it was 13 agents and publishers, and Austin McCauley were the eighth one.
Wow.
And I received a couple of no's. I received a couple of we'll consider it in due time. There were some that didn't respond, but Austin McCauley came back within 2 weeks with a contract. It was great.
Good.
And it was so scary because I received the contract on my phone. I was scrolling through. I saw an email come through. I read the email and I literally threw my phone on the couch. I was like, what? What? Pick it up, read it again. And it took me almost a year to sign that contract because I was petrified. Because in as much as the book is a fiction, it's based on my real life. And
it makes you naked.
Oh, my God. You are vulnerable. And you're putting that out in the world, for the world to see. So it took me a very long time. And a good friend of mine just said, what are you doing, Des? Like, there are authors that are begging for contracts. There are authors that have written lots of books and haven't received a contract. What are you doing? It's a privilege. Sign it. And his words landed. It resonated with me. I signed it. I sent it back. And since then, and I love saying this, Paul Lumby, he's an amazing guy. Paul just turned around to me one day because he did my first interview with Cypress Mail. And he said, that's what you're holding back. You're holding back. I need you to dig deeper. And I didn't want to, you know, because you dig deep. And eventually he just said, that's Bumo, your story's out there. You're now obliged to tell it. And you have to help. You have to help people going through this. Help people. Tell your story because it's exactly how I said it. When stories are shared, we build an ethos of embracing diversity. So the more stories we share,
and
the more we move forward.
But when you share stories, you also lighten your load. I think the first thing you know when you share a story is that you're not alone, because a lot of the time you're too scared to share a story because it's only happening to you and no one's going to understand. And the minute it's out of your mouth, you realize, and especially if you're talking to one or two people, you'll see recognition in someone's eyes and you'll realize, well, I'm not alone. This has happened to someone else.
On that point, Magda, I want to tell you a very beautiful story because it happened recently at the diaspora. We had the Cyprus diaspora in Limassol in May. And so I was on this panel and I was speaking about my book and obviously my story. And the next day we were going to the movies to watch three documentaries that were part of the diaspora. And I went and found my seat and I sat down and a lady came and sat next to me and she was also a speaker, which I recognized from Women in Power. And I was really impressed with her talk.
Okay.
And we were about to introduce ourselves. I turned around and I said, oh, I'm Vespa Bavlo. And she goes, shut up, you're not. And she smacks me on the arm. She's like, oh, yeah, that's for Pablo. I just picked up your book last night and I'm dying to read it because my daughter's gay, you know, and this is exactly what you say.
Okay.
You know, at the diaspora, sharing my story with, you know, on the panel, how many people came to me afterwards and said, you know, I have a best friend who had to leave Cyprus because his parents have kicked him out the house. Exactly what you were saying.
I mean, that's a very common story.
And these stories just started coming one after the other. So Magda, exactly what you say, you know, people understand you. And this book has found its it's found its voice and it's found its people, and it's growing by itself. I just have to stand away. I have to stand out of its way so it can do its thing.
No, but to me, the storytelling, there is so much power in storytelling, and we don't do it enough. I think one of the reasons I started the podcast was storytelling, and I started the podcast in 2013 because, especially by nature, secrets are secretive. There's a lot of shame in the culture. So you're too scared to tell your story because it's shameful.
But you know what I love is also, again, one of the, what you and I had a discussion recently, and I loved it. I loved it because you said, I actually interviewed this lady because of A, but while we started speaking, I realized B was more important, and you focused on that. You completely turned the interview, and, you know, which you never know what you're going to pull out of someone.
Oh, absolutely. You never do know. And it's, that's the beauty of speaking to other people. But for people to open up to you, you've also got to open up to them.
And we're at the age where really, let's call it, who cares?
Who cares?
I'll speak to anyone who needs to listen. And you know what? Kids just need to realize if they can have 10% of our who cares, you know, they'll be better off.
Their life will be so much better. Yes, they will be better. So when can we expect the new book?
We're probably looking to complete the book. Well, I say we. I'm the only one writing it, hey? Probably in the next 7 to 8 months, it'll be completed. And then we start the process. I've been saying this often. Writing the book is the easiest part. It's the other things that become harder. Finding your publishers, finding your agents. Because you've got to do a lot of research, you know. It's an LGBT-themed book. So you've got to... There's certain agents that work with it and certain agents that don't, vice versa with publishers. So,
did they come back with a lot of edits when you wrote the first book
that
not?
Was published is completely different to the one they originally accepted. And I'm actually very grateful for it because when this book went in and it was accepted and we started doing the edits, I thought, okay, you know, a month or two, three edits here, there, whatever, the editing took 2 years. First of all, they wanted, and I don't want this to be a spoiler, but they wanted the ending to change because sales would be better. So in changing the ending, you had to then rework quite a lot of the book. So in doing that, because the original book was a very angry book. Remember I said to you, I was dealing with emotions at the time. And looking back and reading it now, I just... You know, the general theme of that book is anger. And the one that's published is actually love. So I love that the editing took 2 years. I love that we made the changes. And I am so proud of this book that's out. My kind of normal, this one is a wow book.
Did you actually, is that the title you gave it from the beginning?
This title came to me in a dream. It came to me in a dream. And it is. It's God. God said, you're going to write a book, and this is the title, My Kind of Normal. And I loved it. I woke up, and I actually wrote it down. This is my book's name, My Kind of Normal. And it stuck. I actually designed the whole cover. And I wanted the evil eye there because I want protection. I want protection. Mm-hmm. From readers who are naysayers or from anyone. And also it's also got a bit of a twist to it because people think that gays are going to hell. Well, no, we're not. We're not, buddy. Don't worry about it. God loves us. No. And we love God. So, you know, at the end of the day,
kindness and goodness is what counts at the end of the day, not who you sleep 100%. And who you love.
100%. Well said.
Okay. I think this is a good place to end, unless there's anything else
you want to
add.
It's been amazing chatting to you.
Although
we could probably go on for another hour. It's been so easy. Thank you.
Yes, I think we could. But I think I think I like the fact that you dreamt of your title. And we still don't know what normal means, but normal means what I can sleep with at night.
Normal means... Yes.
If I'm okay with
it. It is.
Okay.
100%. I mean, and also, can I just say, you're my first podcaster.
Good. And hopefully yes, not your
I
last one.
I believe so. I've had a few interested parties from the diaspora, so I believe it will carry on. But thank you very much. It's been amazing chatting to you, Magda.
Nice chatting to you too. And remember, the absolutely. Next time you're doing coffee, let me know. Are we doing coffee or wine, depending on the time
thank
of day?
You.
Okay. That's one more. Thank you very much for being with me. Always a pleasure to speak to you. And we said this when we first met. We've known each other for years.
And literally, it hasn't been a month or two.
No, I think we've met. This is the second time we're speaking. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. And remember, your kind of normal is what counts. No one else's normal counts. Thank you and have a nice rest of the day.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.